everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today we are getting back into the Carrier Academy. So the next section of the Carrier Academy that we're going to cover is scanners. And the slideshow that I'm working from, as far as I know, it's still the same slideshow that's in Carrier Academies to this day, is so outdated that it shows the old brick-style scanner. But we're going to do our best with what material we have, because a lot of the stuff that's on here is applicable to scanners today, and I will filter it through for you guys. So I don't think it's still called the MDD, the mobile delivery device. Now it is MDD-TR, mobile delivery device technical refresh. I don't know what that means, technical refresh, but it's not important to us. Anyway, some of the things that your scanner can do is your scanner gives real-time GPS information. So management always knows where your scanner is. It knows how fast your scanner is moving. It knows how long your scanner's been stationary. And all of these things are things that you need to be aware of when you're out delivering the mail. Your scanner will even tell management if it's been stationary for more than 10 minutes, or if it's ahead of schedule or behind schedule. All of those things are done with your scanner. Now, the good news is that your scanner can't get you in trouble on its own. But what it can do is raise red flags for management, and then management comes and asks you, well, what were you doing during this time? And you can get yourself in trouble by answering that question and saying, oh, I'm just sitting under the shade tree playing Candy Crush. And that's how you get into trouble. So that's the GPS. Oh, and it can also tell, allegedly, like when you're driving backwards, because it'll have, there's an option on there. It's option O. It's called How Am I Doing? And it has things on there like number of U-turns, long reverses, hard braking, hard acceleration. And then if you tap each one, it'll tell you what the criteria are. And for a long reverse, like it's a reverse, you drive backward for more than 50 feet. Well, how the hell can your scanner tell what direction you're driving, whether your truck is going forward or going backward? There's no way it can tell that. And so, as I understand it, what it is your scanner has an orientation sensor in it, just like your phone. Like when you hold your phone up, it can tell which way you're facing. That's how the GPS in your phone works. And so if you're going down the street in one direction and your scanner's just tooling along, and then you stop and start going in the opposite direction and your scanner never turns around, well, now as far as your scanner's concerned, it's going backward. And so these are some of the things that your scanner does. And it's reasons like that that the scanner can't be used as the sole source of discipline. Because who knows where the scanner gets these crazy ideas about what you're doing and what you're not doing. So anyway, that's the GPS. The scanner also allows for text messaging. So in your main menu under option B, you can go into text messaging, and then you have inbox, outbox, and sent messages. I think those are the three options. I don't have a scanner right here in front of me. And when you get messages from management, your scanner will make an alert, and there'll be a little envelope like you're used to seeing for a text message. A little envelope icon pops up, and then you go out to your main menu, you go down to option B, and then into the inbox, and you can see what those messages are from management. And it's two-way, so it allows you to message back as well. So management might send you a message saying, hey, what time are you planning on? What time do you think you're going to be back to the station? And then you're going to reply. When you reply, there's all these pre-formatted replies. It says like, accept, like I'm going to do what you say, accept that way. It says being followed, police incident, fire, mail theft, all these different options. And then down at the very bottom, I think it's option K, is other. And if you select other, then you can type in your own message. Also, option F, this one is really useful, is additional time needed. And that's already programmed in there. So if they tell you that, hey, we had some packages show up late and we need you to go pick up those packages, okay, then your reply is going to be additional time needed. Because obviously, this is going to add time to your day. So if one of those canned responses doesn't suit what you need to tell management, like there's no canned response that says I'll be back at 6 o'clock or 1800, so you go down to option K and you type it in there. And for whatever reason, there's no punctuation. You can't do capital lowercase letters. You can't do symbols. You can't do periods or commas. It's just letters, numbers, and spaces. So you kind of have to make do with what you're given. And that's your only option. So what I'll typically do in lieu of a period is I'll put like three spaces. So I'll say like running late, space, 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 back at 1730, something like that. So that's text messaging. You can also use text messaging to keep management informed. Like if you think you're going to be late getting back to the station, you need to let management know. And the nice thing about the scanner is that when you text with the scanner, it leaves a paper trail. And so if there's any dispute about whether or not you told management what your status was, the union stewards can essentially subpoena that scanner data and get those text messages and say, yeah, he told you right here that he wasn't going to be back until 5:30. And so that's in there. So when you send a message, it gives you the option of how many days you want that message to be available, like on the server. I don't really know exactly how that works, but I always change it to 14 days because the union has 14 days to file a grievance. And so that 14 days, the message should be on there for that length of time. So pro tip, when you send a message on the scanner, change it. 5 days is the default. Change it to 14 days. All right, your scanner uploads data essentially continuously, and it also has what's called a geofence, where it knows what route you're on. It knows, because you set it up to that route, it knows the path that that route is supposed to take, and it knows when you break off of that path. And so, again, it may send up an alert that says, hey, Pauline is not where she's supposed to be. She's like 2 miles off of her route. And the supervisor is supposed to investigate that and figure out what's going on. Now, there may be perfectly legitimate reasons why Pauline is 2 miles off of her route. Maybe that's the nearest clean bathroom. And that's a perfectly good reason. But again, because your scanner is watching for stuff like that, you be prepared to be questioned about it. And if you're concerned that that questioning may lead to discipline, then you're going to want to ask for a union steward to get involved and to be present during that questioning, and that is your right. So that's the geofence. The other thing on the geofence is it knows like when you leave the station, and management will say, well, we want everybody to break the geofence by 9 o'clock. So you have to be like loaded up and driven away by 9 o'clock. Now, they can want that all they want. They can want that all day long, but it still takes however long it takes for you to get your mail ready, to load up the truck, to make sure everything's set up, and to get out on the street. And as long as you're not engaging in time-wasting practices, there's no discipline for, I want you to break the geofence by 9 o'clock. So what? Yeah, I want higher pay. I want all sorts of things, but it's not going to happen. It takes however long it actually takes you. All right, so when you set up, there is a legal screen right when you first log on, and that tells you essentially this is a government computer, and everything you're doing on there is subject to surveillance. So be aware of that. That should not come as a surprise to you, but that is how that works. Also, the scanner will monitor its own battery, and if there's anything less than 8 hours of battery life on that battery, it'll tell you. And it'll say, you know, this battery is expected to last between 4 and 6 hours. And so if that happens, you want to get with your supervisor, see if they have either a spare battery you can bring out with you or grab a different scanner because you need the scanner to last the whole day. This is like a big part of your job is scanning. Also, when you go to change the battery, you have to do what's called a battery swap so that the scanner shuts down properly and will set up for the new battery to come in. And so in order to do that, there's in the top right corner of your scanner, on the screen in the scanner, there's these three lines, and that brings up like a separate menu. When you press those three lines, one of the options is battery swap. And then you tap battery swap, and it walks you through the instructions. All right, next is scanning itself. So scanning is pretty straightforward. The yellow buttons on the side of the scanner are the scan buttons. Either one works. There's also black buttons on the side of the scanner. And on one side, there's a single black button, and that's an enter button. And on the other side is two black buttons, and those are up and down to scroll up and down. So sometimes if for whatever reason your touch screen is being uncooperative, then you can often use those black buttons to get to the option you want and to press enter. So it's something to keep in mind. Also, something that will happen from time to time is your keyboard will just disappear. And you go to type something in and there's no keyboard there. Well, how the hell are you supposed to do this without a keyboard? So there is a fix for that. And that also is in that little submenu up in the top right. So in the top right corner of your screen, you got those three lines. You tap that, and if you scroll down a little bit, you will see diagnostics. So you go to diagnostics, and then in there, there's all these things that you can test. You can test the scanner. You can test the buzzer. But the one you're looking for is test keyboard. And when you press test keyboard, the keyboard pops up, and that solves your problem. So if you ever lose the keyboard, that's how you get it back. All right, so when you're scanning, you want to hold the scanner at the old one needed to be at a certain angle. This one really doesn't. But what it does need is for the barcode to either be fully in the light or fully in the shade. Because if half the barcode is in the sun, then it makes it a lot harder for the scanner to read. Because the scanner has to get the right exposure level to get the black and white lines to have contrast. And so if it's overexposed or underexposed, it's not going to read the barcode correctly. So it's best, like what you'll see carriers do all the time, is like they turn their back to the sun and then scan the package so that the barcode is fully in the shade. The other thing that you can scan is if the barcode isn't readable for some reason, like there's an extra line in there and it fouls the barcode. Most labels now also have a QR code that you can scan. It's just a small box. It doesn't have a ton of data in it like some of the other QR codes you might see on the label. This one, like once you recognize it, you'll know what it is. It has a black border on the left and on the bottom, and it doesn't have like the boxes in the corner. It's a pretty basic QR code, and that has the barcode information on it. You know, the tracking number is in that QR code. So those scan just as well. Although you have to be careful, sometimes for whatever reason, the number that's embedded in that QR code doesn't match with what's on the barcode. And so every time I scan, whether I'm scanning the QR or the barcode, what I'll do is check the last three digits of the tracking number and make sure it matches up with what I scanned. You know, if you just look at the last digit, there's a 1 in 10 chance it's going to be the same by coincidence. But if you check the last three digits, that's enough to make sure that, yes, this matches. So that's scanning. Next, when you go, so after you've scanned a package, say, for delivery, your scanner is going to ask you a series of questions. And answering those questions gets you through the rest of the screens. So after you scan it, you confirm the number. Now you're going to press enter. And that lets the scanner know that, okay, this is the package that we're working with. So you press enter and the scanner says, okay, you've got this package. The scanner actually knows what kind of package it is. The scanner knows whether it needs a signature, whether it's an express mail, whether it's a certified letter, whatever it happens to be. So in this case, we'll say it's just a normal package. So now your scanner is going to ask, okay, what are you doing with this package? And your choices are delivered, attempted, returned to sender or forwarded, and other. So if you're delivering the package, obviously you're going to select delivered. And then the scanner wants to know, okay, where did you deliver it to? And it gives you a list of options. Front door, mailbox, left of the individual, front desk or business, front desk reception, parcel locker, left with neighbor, what are the other ones? Tendered to authorized agent. There's a whole bunch of list on there. And you choose whichever one you think is the most appropriate for where you left it. This is not an official designation. Like front door, there's nothing official about it. It's your best determination of where you left the thing. And this is useful to you because if that package goes missing, the supervisor will be able to pull up that tracking information and say, hey, you put on your scanner that you put it at number 6, garage or other at address. Did you put this in the garage? And you say, oh, no, they don't have a garage, but I put it over by their carport because it was a nice bush over there. You know, and that pressing garage is going to remind you that, okay, that's where you put it. And I'll give you an example of how I use this on my own route. I used to deliver to these townhouses, and the front doors where the mailboxes were all kind of in this central courtyard, and they all faced each other, and there was a lot of foot traffic. And the problem with that is if I left a package at somebody's front door, there's a really good chance that package is going to get stolen because porch pirates are looking for targets of opportunity. And so when they see that package sitting there, it's too tempting to just go up and grab it. So what the residents preferred was for me to go back behind their houses, behind the townhouses, into the alley. And in the alley is where they parked all their cars. And then they all had these enclosed backyards with high gates. And they want me to like chuck it over the gate into their backyard or onto their back porch, you might say. Well, option number 2 on the scanner is front door or porch. But if I put that I delivered it to the porch, then when they look at their tracking, it looks like I left it at the front door, and that's not good. Then they know, oh crap, it's going to get stolen right away. So what I would do instead is I would mark those as number 6, garage or other at address, and that would let them know that I put it at the back of the house where their cars are, so I would mark that as garage. You know, again, there's nothing official about these designations, but this is the way that you can use them to help yourself remember where you put that package, help the customer find it, and help the supervisor to track stuff down. Same with, I have some houses on my route now that they have like a parcel box at their front door, or even just like a bin where they want me to put their parcels if I deliver them, because it's that same idea that they don't want the porch pirate driving by to just see this package. So they'll have like a big box where they want me to put it inside. If I put it in there, I'm going to mark it as number 5, parcel locker. Even though that's not an actual parcel locker, it's good enough for my purposes. And that lets that customer know, hey, don't worry, I put it inside of that box, so it's not going to be seen from the street. You know, it's a little bit more secure. So that's delivered. Next, and then after you press where you left it, it'll have you confirm the zip code. And normally it's just automatic because that zip code is embedded in the tracking. But it's not always that way. It may not always match with where you're actually delivering it. Like if you have a package that was forwarded, then the tracking number is going to have the old zip code in it because they don't update the barcode when they forward the package. They just send it to the new address. And so your zip code's not going to match. You're going to have to enter the zip code where you actually delivered it. Doesn't come up that often, but that can happen. And you definitely want to look for that with forwarded packages. Okay, so that's delivered. Now let's talk about attempted. So with attempted, your scanner's going to do the same thing. You're saying, I attempted to deliver this, but I wasn't able to. And your scanner wants to know, okay, why weren't you able to deliver it? And it could be that there was no secure location. We don't just want to leave the package at the front door where it's going to get stolen. It could be that there was nobody available. It could be there was no access. Like if you go to a gated community and you can't get in the gate, then that's no access. You know, there are any number of reasons. And again, there's that list of reasons. Could be animal interference. I think that's number 5 by memory. Luckily, I don't have a lot of those anymore. But if there's like a loose dog and you don't want to go into that yard because you don't feel like getting bit by a dog, that's a very good reason why you would have attempted but not been able to deliver it. So you're going to mark it as animal interference. And then in some cases, if it's appropriate, your scanner is going to ask you for a 3849, which is the left notice slip where, like, if there was no safe place to leave your package, then we're going to take our left notice slip, the PS form 3849, we're going to fill that out, put it in their mailbox, and let them know, hey, we came out to deliver this package. There was nowhere safe to leave it. So you can either come to the post office and get your package, or you can request us to redeliver it, maybe, you know, tell us where you want us to put it. So your scanner will sometimes ask you for the 3849. In a situation like no access, where you get to the gated community and you can't get in, you mark it as no access, the scanner's not going to ask you for a 3849 because where would you put that 3849? Like, you can't get to their front door. You can't get to their mailbox. So there's nowhere for you to leave the slip. And so it doesn't ask for a 3849. Same with business closed. With a closed business, we know they're going to be open tomorrow. And so we go out there, we try to deliver it. The business is closed. You mark it as business closed. And the scanner doesn't ask for a 3849 because it knows we're automatically just going to try to redeliver it tomorrow. So there's no need for the 3849. With return to sender, if you select return to sender or forward it, it gives you a bunch of what are called carrier endorsements. These are the reasons for non-delivery. Option one is forwarded. So if somebody moved, they put in a change of address, we're going to forward it to where they live now. And then the other options are all these reasons for non-delivery. It could be addressee not known, like that person doesn't live at that address. It could be a bad address, like insufficient address, where we don't have enough information to complete the delivery. Could be no such number, where the number part of the address is wrong. There could be any number of reasons. One of them that's on there is called refused. And that's definitely something that you will wind up using, because sometimes customers get things they didn't order, or they decide they didn't want, or whatever the issue is. Maybe the thing is damaged and they don't want to take it. And so no problem. You scan it, you mark it as refused, and you're going to return it to sender. And then finally, option four is other. And other has some stuff that, unless you're doing a weird type of mail delivery, you're generally not going to use, like dispatch to military post office. I mean, I'm sure there's some carriers out there that use that. But the big one that you're going to use on other is visible damage. So when you get a package in the morning that has damage, you know, that it's been like Amazon, dude, they ship these heavy things like a box of dog food, and they just put the one piece of tape down the middle of the box, and it's not enough to hold that box closed. And so the box busts open, and now you've got this open box. And so you want to make sure as soon as you get it, you scan it as visible damage, because you don't want the customer blaming you for that. And if there's things missing, you don't want them to think that you're the person who stole them. So as soon as you get that package like that, first thing you're going to do is scan it, you confirm the number, then go to number four, other, and then you're going to mark it, I think it's number five, visible damage. And then you're going to try to patch up that damage. You're going to retape the box. You're going to, you know, look for the things that might have fallen out of it. You're going to, whatever it is, to try to like sew it back up, essentially. And then when you deliver it, you know, then it's in the tracking. And I'll go one step further. When I deliver items that have visible damage, I will knock, knock, knock on the door, wait for the person to answer and say, hey, I got this, you have this package, but it came damaged. And so what do you want to do with it? Do you want to accept it? Maybe what's in there is fine. Or do you want to just return it to sender now? And that can save the customer a lot of headache, because if they return it later, they're going to have to get a new shipping label. They may have to find a new box, all this stuff. Whereas if they refuse it right then, it's a lot easier on them. And I'll give you an example. I was delivering to a business, and I had a box that clearly something glass in the box had broken. And so when you pick up and move the box, it's just jingle jangle inside the box. And that's bad. So I go into the business and I tell them, hey, I've already scanned. This is damaged. What do you want to do? And when they move the box, they say, well, this is a ceramic Winnie the Pooh cookie jar and it's clearly destroyed. So yeah, just send it back. And that's great. You know, that saves that customer a lot of hassle. All right, moving on. Let's see what's next. Signature. So with the signature, your scanner will know whether or not your item needs a signature. And so when you go to deliver it, you'll notice that a lot of the options for where it's delivered, like in the mailbox, it's not on there because your scanner knows, hey, this thing needs a signature. It can't be left at the mailbox. So your options get a lot more limited. Now you just have left with individual, left with neighbor, front desk reception, and I think authorized agent. I think those are the only ones. But generally, you're going to do left with individual, and then the signature screen comes up. And the nice thing is, if the scanner has the information, it will automatically fill in the address portion of the signature screen. The signature screen essentially mirrors what the signature panel is on a 3849. So on the bottom, it has the address. Right above that, there's a box for their printed name. And then above that is a box for the signature. And so what I'll typically do is the address is already in there. And then I will print the person's name in the printed name because anybody can print. And so that way, when the person answers the door, all they have to do is sign their name. They're done. I press enter. Boom, the package is theirs. Next, your scanner may occasionally ask you, is this a duplicate mail piece? So you scan an item and then you're forgetful and you scan it again and your scanner says, wait, these are two labels and they have the exact same tracking number. Is this a duplicate? And you realize, oh no, I just accidentally scanned it twice. What's more common is like you're too fast on the trigger finger and you press the scan button and then you press it again without, you know, not on purpose and it scans it again. And is this a duplicate? And your answer is almost always going to be no. But every once in a while, you will get two exact duplicate labels. And that's essentially the shipper sending out two items for the price of one. And so when that happens, when the scanner asks you, is this a duplicate label? You're going to say yes. And then you can go ahead and deliver both of those items. And as I understand it, the shipper automatically gets charged a second time for that second label. And so we recoup the money for that. The other situation, though, is when you're accepting items, and we'll talk about prepaid acceptance when we're picking up packages rather than delivering them. We'll talk about that on a future episode. But when that happens and your scanner detects a duplicate, you want to bring it to the shipper's attention right away because almost always they've made a mistake and they've accidentally printed two labels. And that means that one of those labels is on the wrong box. And so you bring that to their attention, and then they will attempt to fix it. All right, when you move from zip code to zip code, you know what? We'll talk about the time clock. How am I doing? 27 minutes. Let me see what else we have on here. Okay. So the last thing we're going to talk about is the time clock built into the scanner. So, of course, when you clock in, you're going to choose what type of worker you are. You're a city carrier, and then it wants to know whether you're mounted or walking. And if you're mounted, then it's going to ask you for a vehicle number. Well, what vehicle are you driving? If you're walking, then it won't ask you for that. And there'll be certain things about the workflow that are different with mounted versus walking. For me, I'm on a walking route in the sense that it's a park and loop route, but I still drive a vehicle. I drive the vehicle, park it at the end of the street, and then I walk the street from door to door. That is considered a mounted route because I am using a vehicle. So for most of you, you're always going to be mounted. There are walkout routes in some big cities, but we don't have as many of those as we used to have, and most carriers are mounted. So whatever it is, you choose, you know, what type of route you're doing, and then you put in your route information. And then it'll ask you, did you do your vehicle check? And you say yes. Did you find any problems? Either yes or no, whatever. And then you go on with your day. Well, at some point, you're going to move out to the street, and you need to do that on your scanner. So when you first start in the morning, your scanner automatically puts you in the office because that's where you are when you clock in. Then when you're done doing office duties, and we'll talk about like what the distinctions are between office duties and street duties. We'll talk about those in a future episode. But when you're going to move from office duties to street duties, you have to move on the scanner so that the scanner knows that, and more importantly, your supervisor knows that you're no longer on office time, you're on street time. So you go to option T in the main menu, time clock, you scan your badge, and then it'll give you these options. Begin tour. It probably doesn't give you begin tour because that might be grayed out because you've already done that. Out to lunch, in from lunch, move, and end tour. So in this case, obviously, you're going to choose move. When you choose move, it gives you the option to change your route. And sometimes you're going to have to do that. Like if you're a CCA or you're on the overtime list or something and you're giving what's called auxiliary assistance, where you're going to be helping multiple people, then you're going to have to move from route to route as you go from helping one person to helping another person. In this case, if you're just moving from the office to the street, you don't need to change routes. You just need to change what type of work you're doing. So you can just press enter and get past that route screen, and then it'll ask you I think the zip code, and then I don't have this right off the top of my head, but follow the prompts on the screen. It'll walk you through. The big thing is that when you change tasks from street to office, office to street, you need to make sure that you change what you're doing in the time clock on your scanner. And then the other thing is when you change from route to route. So when you go to do that auxiliary assistance, someplace they call it a handoff, a pivot, a bump, a split, whatever it is, that auxiliary assistance, you need to make sure that in your scanner, you change from one route to the other. And in addition to management needing that for timekeeping purposes, there are also really practical reasons why you want to do that. Remember earlier, we talked about that geofence, where the scanner knows what path you're supposed to be taking on your route. Well, if you go to somebody else's route and you don't change it in your scanner to that route, then your scanner is going to keep on sending up alerts that says, hey, Janine is not in the place that she's supposed to be. And now you're on management's radar, and that's not a place that you want to be. Likewise, features that we haven't talked about yet, like load truck and package look ahead, those are based on what route you're working. And so those also won't work unless you're clocked over to the appropriate route. So again, as you change routes, you're going to have to go into time clock and make sure that you put in the appropriate route. All right, and we are actually at the end of module one. So I am going to go over these last little things. Might as well complete it. So after we finish talking about the scanner, another thing the scanner can do actually using the GPS is it can give you alerts based on your location. So where this is most used is for dog warnings. We have dog warning cards that can be mixed in with your mail so that as you're walking up to that house, you see the warning card and it says, hey, there is a Rottweiler here who's really aggressive. Be careful. But that can also be built into your scanner so that when you're walking down the street, as you approach that house, your scanner will give you an alert. And it says like a dangerous animal is reported in your area. And then you look at the scanner, it'll tell you the address, it'll tell you what the situation is. So that can be really useful because carriers don't always remember to put those warning cards in. Or if you're doing auxiliary assistance, you know, they may not have known that somebody else is going to be doing it and that warning's not present. But in the scanner, it just goes on the GPS. And so that's a much more reliable way, or it should be a more reliable way to make sure that people have that necessary information. That can also be done with other hazards, like let's say there's a trip hazard at this house. Like, hey, if you walk across the lawn, there's a wire in the lawn that'll trip you. And so you can put stuff like that in the scanner as well. Okay, finally, we get to the vehicle inspection, and there is a card that you should be given, or it's easy to get your hands on this card, and it breaks down the entire vehicle inspection process step by step. Guys, you get paid by the hour and you get paid to do the job a certain way, and it is worth your while to do the vehicle inspection properly. These are old trucks, they're beat up, they don't work very well, and so that vehicle inspection protects you from potential hazards when you're out in the street. And if you find a problem in your vehicle inspection, you're going to want to write that up on a vehicle repair tag, which is a PS Form 4565. It's a long, thin form, and it has a bunch of checkboxes on it, like what's wrong? Is it the brakes? Is it the horn? Is it the engine? Is it the transmission? You know, whatever it is. And then you're going to essentially put your best description of what the problem is as you see it. You know, it could be a flat tire, whatever it is. With the LLV, mechanics have been working on these forever, and like the same 10 things tend to break all the time. And so, you know, they can usually figure out what the issue is. But again, you just want to put your best possible description that you can on there so that they know what the problem is that they're trying to fix. And then you sign that, you give it to your supervisor, and they'll call that in to maintenance. Or it may work different where you are depending on what your arrangement is at your station with maintenance. But at a minimum, if you're not sure, take it to your supervisor and they should be able to help you make that arrangement, get that vehicle fixed. And be aware, turning in the vehicle repair tag does not get the vehicle fixed. The maintenance worker is what gets the vehicle fixed. So even if you turn that in the morning, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to be fixed. Like if you have a flat tire, before you go out and load that truck later in the morning, you better check and make sure that that tire got replaced. Otherwise, you're going to load the truck and then realize, oh my gosh, I can't drive this truck. and you're going to have to unload it, find another one, and it's a hassle. So that's all part of that vehicle inspection process. All right, and then finally, LOVs were having a problem of catching on fire. Flex fuels catch on fire as well from time to time. And so if your vehicle catches on fire, your job is first to make yourself safe, second to make the community safe. So as soon as you realize there may be a fire happening, you're going to pull to the side of the road, put it in park, set the brake, take out, you know, turn off the engine, and then get away. That's it. Don't try to save the packages. Don't put yourself in any kind of danger. Call 911. Let the professionals handle it. And, you know, people's Amazon package can be replaced. But you need to make yourself safe first. And then that put it in park and set the brake, that helps to make other people safe because, you know, heaven forbid you stop on a little slope and you run out, the vehicle catches on fire and now it goes like rolling down the street and now you've got a much bigger problem than just the mail truck catching on fire. So that is definitely, you know, something to be aware of. All right, so let's go over some of the stuff that we talked about in Module 1. First, we went over the basic rules just for being a letter carrier, for what is expected of you as a letter carrier. And that's be on time, report to work as scheduled, keep the mail secure, work in a safe manner, be professional, things like that. As a carrier, in order to ensure the security of the mail, this isn't talked about. Let me tip my hand a little bit about what I'm doing here. I am reading the review that's at the end of the module. And whoever wrote these review questions, apparently they didn't look at the module. Because like this review item number 2, it says, what are the some things that you can do as a carrier to ensure security of the mail? And then it lists these things in here that says like, don't put the mail in your pockets or in your clothing or in your lunchbox or anything like that. And that comes up later in like module 5 or something like that. It is nowhere mentioned in module 1, but I didn't write these questions. So I will tell you to keep the mail secure, like make sure you don't put it in your pocket or something because A, it makes it look like you're stealing. And B, even if you don't intend to, you could wind up accidentally stealing it because you forgot that it was in your lunchbox. Next, what penalties might you incur if you were to delay, discard, tamper, read, or open the mail entrusted to you? You can wind up getting in serious legal trouble if you mess with the mail. We are in a position of trust, and we need to take that trust seriously. All right, next was an example of jargon. It talks about the case, which is where we organize our mail in the morning. We case our mail at the case. That's the one that has all those dividers in it with all the addresses. We have the big orange things that we put our mail in. Those are called hampers. Some places call them pumpkins. There's other types of mail transport equipment, like cages, wires, things like that. You'll pick up that jargon pretty quick. Okay, whose responsibility is it to accurately record the time that you've worked? It's your responsibility. You have to make sure that you move properly from route to route. You have to make sure that you clock in, that you clock out. You can't rely on the supervisor to do that for you. And you also want to make sure that you go on Light Blue and check your virtual time card from time to time because management can make mistakes. They can clock you out early. They can do all these things that wind up messing with your time, and you don't want that. All right, next question on here. How much time do you get for lunch? I honestly, with these episodes have been so spread out, I don't even remember if we talked about it. But you get 30 minutes for lunch, and that time includes travel time. So as soon as you break off your route to go head to Del Taco, that's when that clock starts ticking. So if you go somewhere that's 10 minutes away for lunch, you drive there for 10 minutes, you drive back for 10 minutes, it only leaves you 10 minutes to eat lunch. So you have to be thoughtful about where you're going. Next, the job safety analysis is something we talked about early on. It's this step-by-step guide for how to do particular tasks that we do safely. And you can ask for job safety analyses for certain things that you're doing, and there's a whole book that has a ton of them in there. Remember when you're lifting that you want to bring the weight in close to you, lift it straight up, and try to keep your spine straight, no twisting, and lift with your legs. All right, and then when you are out on the route, this is another question that comes up nowhere in this module. It says, when on the route, what is a key component of being safe? And the answer is constant awareness of your surroundings. So guys, we are out on the streets, we're in different neighborhoods all the time, and it is really important to have that situational awareness to keep you safe. When your scanner goes dark and the screen blanks out, you just press the scan button, or in the top right, there's a power button. Either one of those will wake your scanner up to make it usable. Another reminder here in question 12 that you are almost certainly going to be a motorized carrier. I was saying mounted earlier. It's motorized, on-street motorized versus on-street walking. And so you are almost certainly going to be a motorized carrier because you will use a vehicle as part of your route. All right. And that will do for, that's it. We finished day one of the Carrier Academy. Dude, good job us. We are making progress. We are getting there. So the next episode that I do like this, we will cover day two of the Carrier Academy. And the days get shorter and the material gets a little more interesting. So thanks for listening, guys. Thanks for sticking with me. And I will catch you all next time.